China displays its military might while announcing some massive cuts to its military. From Marketplace, I'm Noelle King, and for David Brancaccio. Chinese President Xi Jinping said he'll cut 300,000 people from the country's military. He made the announcement during a military parade in Beijing commemorating the end of World War II. The BBC's John Sudworth is with us from Beijing. And John, you have this announcement of large military cuts during a parade that's meant to telegraph military might. It seems contradictory.
When most countries announce military cuts, it's often for spending reasons, reasons of tightening budgets. In China, I think we can say today that two go very much hand in hand. A lot of analysts suggest that actually this was a cut long in the making, and it's all about making China's military leaner and meaner. It may be losing sort of muddied boots on the ground type soldiers, but you can be absolutely certain China's defense budget is increasing year on year by 10% or so every year. So this is about China shifting resources rather than an absolute cut in financial terms.
So a modernizing army and a more expensive military. You know, we've had so much economic news out of China in the past couple of weeks, the turmoil in the markets, the concerns over growth. It sounds like what you're saying, though, is that this move is not a money-saving move. It's not pegged to any of that financial turmoil.
I think, you're right. China has faced a number of serious challenges in recent weeks. I think, you know, when you think of the importance of the military to this country, the importance of the military to Xi Jinping's presidency, he owes his power, if you like, not just to that title of president, but also, of course, to the all-important title of chairman of China's powerful military commission. The armed forces are so wrapped up with power in China that you can be pretty certain that this announcement has been long in the planning. It will not have come as a sort of knee-jerk response to meltdowns in the markets or currency devaluations.
For those whose jobs are cut, what is the government's responsibility to them? Is there concern about finding new work for these people now?
And that is where I think we can see some sort of economic implications of all this. Often in China, that transition from guaranteed health care and guaranteed pensions, that transition into civilian life is difficult, as it is in many other countries. So real issues, I think, in terms of how to find re-employment for 300,000 men and women, China will need to get that right. It knows it. And, I think a lot of it will depend on the time scale. As I say, we don't yet have any sight of what that might be.
That was the BBC's John Sudworth in Beijing. Quick look at some numbers. Right now, the FT 100 in London is trading up 1.6%, same with the CAC 40 in Paris. The DAX in Germany is up 1.8%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up by about 0.5%. Strong or at least steady job growth and low unemployment suggest a continuing economic recovery, but a new report by the National Employment Law Project, an advocacy group, says take-home pay has effectively fallen since the recovery began 6 years ago. The declines in paychecks were biggest for people in relatively low-paid work, including retail jobs, home health care, and food service preparation. Those are also the sectors where hiring is strong. Earlier this year, the results of a large study about kids' brains were published online in a journal called Nature Neuroscience. The findings surprised many people and could change the way we think about poverty and the achievement gap. I went to see the neuroscientist who conducted the research. Elizabeth Sowell is a professor of pediatrics at USC. She conducts her research at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles. That's where we met. And Sowell says her research was inspired by something we already do know.
So we've known for a long time from many studies that children from lower socioeconomic backgrounds have more difficulties in school. They don't do as well on cognitive tests. They have lots of problems. And we've known that for a long time. It's been documented in the scientific literature.
But what accounts for the gap in things like concentration, vocabulary, and memory? Sowell wondered if there was any connection between how much money parents made and how their kids' brains developed. She and her colleagues recruited more than 1,000 young people from across the country, ages 3 through 20. They took scans of the children's brains and asked their parents, "How much money do you make?" They found that, on average, the lower-income kids had a smaller brain surface area.
If you look at the children whose families made $25,000 a year or less, their brain surface area was about 6% smaller than the families who made $150,000 a year or more.
That's on average. Some of the kids from six-figure households had brains similar in size to their lower-income peers, and vice versa. Sowell hopes her research makes a point. She says growing up in poverty puts children at a disadvantage. Now she says there's evidence that it's a physical disadvantage.
I think that what this study has done is shown that there's an actual physical link with the brain. It's really exciting to see it. I want this work to be an impetus to really say, what are we doing with our money?
What she means by our money is partly tax dollars, dollars that support school nutrition, after-school programs, and education for low-income parents on the importance of, for example, having books in the home. Neuroscientists know that reading and music lessons and trips to museums, new experiences, physically shape children's brains over time. Sowell's research couldn't pinpoint exactly what money does buy that causes the physiological differences between low and higher income children. She says answering that question is her next research project. Finally, the European Commission president plans to propose a major increase in the number of asylum seekers that EU countries would be required to harbor temporarily. He wants to see that number rise from 40,000 people across the EU to 160,000. We're coming to you from studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey today. I'm Noelle King with the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.